Welcome to the Ivy Podcast. We're just two aunties sharing our experience through the lens of one Blackfoot woman and one Anishinaabe woman. And we are Indigenous Vision, an educational nonprofit based in Montana and Arizona. We are 100% Indigenous led, and this is our podcast. Check us out at indigenousvision.org to learn more about our work, make a donation, or play back any of our radio shows and this episode.
Hello and welcome to the Indigenous Vision Podcast, episode 77. We are here to recap some of the amazing things that have happened to us in the year 2022. My name is Melissa. I am here with our executive director, Suta Callinglast. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm doing beautiful. I'm not sick. And you see the snow like gently falling in my window behind me? I don't know. Oh, I just kind of ruined the focus on the camera, but yeah, I love it outside. It's so peaceful. We have snow. And one of the things I love about living in Missoula, Montana is the snow and how peaceful it is when it's nice and fluffy and it kind of sticks to the branches and has that winter picturesque look, where East Glacier, Heart Butte side, is it all blows away really fast. How are you?
I'm doing fantastic. I am also not sick. I have
the residual.
Cheers. Yeah, I've got the residual, you know, coughs, but I feel great. Yeah, I should put a cheer in there. And the weather is very cool here in Vegas. I know it's nothing like Montana or our friends and family in the north, but it is very cold here. So I'm in a quick little hunker down for the next couple of weeks until spring hits in mid-January. And I'm just enjoying my apartment. I've been reflecting a lot in here because I think I'm going to move. So I'm kind of in that looking around zone, things are about to change again in my life. And I'm really excited about that. So this is a perfect timing of this episode to kind of go over some of the blessings, you could say, or some of the intentional things that we made happen in 2022, which were a lot, despite all the sickness. I know we complained and, you know, a lot for the past few episodes about being sick, but there was a lot of really good, cool stuff that happened to us. I don't know if you want to start off. Should we just go linear? Should we just go wherever?
Wherever, because I didn't, you know, we were going to have a guest today, but they rescheduled and I didn't get to write anything down, but we'll try to go maybe through the months. Our grant was renewed by TIDES, which is our major general capacity grant that helps pick up the spots. The EPA grant doesn't pay for some things. So general capacity grants have to, and that magically and purposefully, because I applied and try to keep the communication, and we're looking for another general capacity funder. We're going for multi-year. We prefer multi-year, that 3 to 5 year funding, because we need healthcare and we need project manager to help take care of all of our details of all of our amazing projects that we're trying to pare down, focus, minimize, wrap up, and then move on to next steps in a lot of projects. And so yeah, our projects are just doing awesome. We have a project feature with Working Dogs for Conservation in Grist magazine right now. It just came out yesterday. And oh my goodness, that's a few. Let me think on another couple.
Cool. Yeah, that's huge to have such a big grant come in and secure us for another year of amazing work. And then I did read the article on GIST. It's so cool to see. Because I've heard you talk about the dogs for so long and now it's happening. So to see you go in that direction with dogs is pretty cool, to see you manifest it and make it happen. I'm thinking about January of last year. Where was I at? I had just started a waitressing job here in Vegas because I had felt that I had gotten through the worst part of the pandemic and was ready to rejoin society. And that was kind of my way of doing that, by reintroducing myself to the locals here, because I had never, I'd moved here 2020 mid pandemic and I didn't really get to meet anybody the first year I lived here. So I was cooped up in my apartment a lot. So getting the job and then meeting this whole new group of people was really cool. And I got to learn the city in a way that I probably would have never been able to had I not met so many cool locals. And I just kind of fulfilled a personal bucket list by becoming a waitress. That may sound really strange, why would I want to ever become a waitress? It has a lot to do with the body image that I had and the fact that I could never be hired as a waitress in Winnipeg for whatever reason. I had tried and tried for years and I just always got denied and I always got shoved in the back of the kitchen or the back of wherever. And they were just like, no, you're not. We don't think you'd be best up front here. You can go work in the back. So that kind of like had an impact on me. So to get hired as a waitress in a city of like Las Vegas was really boom. I did it. I finally, you know, got that out of the way. And now I'm a waitress part-time and it's really kind of fun. And I'm part of this weird legacy of being in the industry here in Las Vegas and kind of being a part of it, which is cool. I think, I don't know how long I'll last because, you know, it's kind of a bucket list item and the more money I make, the more I won't need it, but it's interesting nonetheless to be a waitress in Vegas for sure.
Oh my God. You look like such a normal heavy metal goth girl,
but in a city like Winnipeg it's not normal. Our Canadian cities in general, and I know I have a bias, but it's just not for me. And people ask me that all the time when they find out I'm from Canada. They're like, why are you here? And I just straight up say I'm just too weird for Canada. If I want to just get it over with instead of trying to do this big explanation about my career and blah blah blah, it's like the bottom line was I am simply too weird for Canada and America is a strange place. Vegas is a freak show and a half. So I'm right where I fit in.
Because I've always been submerged in some kind of musical subculture. So I've seen people invested in the lifestyle in many different ways, you know, rappers do it. You know, it's a lifestyle, right?
Yeah.
With certain clothes and then skinheads, I really like the sharp lifestyle. That's skinheads against racial prejudice. And they will beat you up and kick you down if you are a racist jerk. And I appreciate those levels of devotion to being something like you're dedicated, you're responsible to it, you're accountable. And if you're going to do something, do it all the way and do it awesome.
What about you? What other major like highlights do you want to share with our listeners today about 2022?
Oh my goodness. I got to get out with the dogs. That was a major highlight for me, especially because I lost my dog of 17 years. And so it's kind of his, you know, I'm not ready to have a personal dog yet. He wasn't a normal dog, right? He acted like a cat and he was quiet. He didn't really bark unless he was super excited. It's the coolest being ever. And so I'm working with the dogs again. And we're, now that classes are done, I became a professor, an instructor at the university. That was kind of cool. And no matter how many times I said, I like being your instructor, or this instructor gig is different, they still always responded with, well, have a good day, professor. And I was like, no matter how many times I say it, they just keep calling me professor. Okay, I'll take it. Thank you. And I am working on that PhD because one friend said that I couldn't be a professor unless I had a PhD. So.
Oh dear.
I know.
That's huge. Seeing you out in the field with dogs, healing after Anna's passing, and then you became a flipping professor. Even I was like, we got to write about this in the newsletter. We got to put this on the website. And you were just like, so chill about it. I was like, Suta, this is a really big deal.
Yeah. Well, I owed my department. They are the environmental studies department at the University of Montana. It's just one very cool department of people. And they, ever since I started in 2003 there, they just had my back for internships and no matter what I said I wanted to do, they had something to support that goal. And so, yeah. And it wasn't like here's an email, have an internship. It was like, hey, Suta, I talked to this person here for you. Here's their number. They'll be your boss. Just show up. I'm like, oh my goodness. Thank you. Yes. Wow. And so they called and said that a professor had left and that they didn't have anyone to fill the class. And so I asked what class it was, I think. And I think I said yes before I even knew what class it was. But You know, I can do environmental studies 101. And it turned out to be a traditional ecological knowledge and sustainability course.
How are the students?
They were awesome. It was really hard to, I think I got asked a couple weeks before class started. And so I didn't even really get to dive in because work and being an ED, I didn't even get to the syllabus until like the week and a half before classes started. And then I realized that from week 7 or 6 was all guest lecturers. And I was like, oh my God, what am I going to do? Because I had to, you know, when you have a guest lecturer in your syllabus, you kind of just facilitate the conversation between the guest lecturer and the students. And so I had to come up with completely new topics and reading material, and I didn't have time to pick out books even. So we just went with 30 articles. There was a little bit more than 30 articles, and then some videos, and and it turned out pretty decent for given that much time to plan and prepare for it and just make up the last 7 weeks. It turned out pretty decent, and it was such a great group of people. We worked on I relied on cultural humility in those first couple of weeks, and taking information from people and how it's done, and then what current narratives are of traditional knowledge and how traditional ecological knowledge fits into all of the different categories of life that we have. And so I really worked on them with being good people and good relatives, and how to create mutually beneficial relationships without exploitation, and then how to take information and how to include it and how to cite it so that you're not stepping on toes and you're lifting people up where they should be. And so I appreciated that, but there was a lot of times where I was like, well, that's it today. We're out early. I'm not gonna stumble over words or anything. If we're done, you know. So we get out 20 minutes early some days. But it was
cool.
It was such an amazing experience to even have that time to create 30 lectures about over 15 weeks on traditional ecological knowledge. Go.
Wow.
Like, oh my goodness. Oh, okay. But we did really cool topics like spirituality, the role of dreams in traditional ecological knowledge, which is very cool because I was just thinking this is not even a feature of the year, but this morning I was thinking about how blessed I am to be born Indigenous and Blackfoot. And then further than that, I'm so blessed to be born into the families I was born into, where there's like governmental leadership experience on one side, and then like just the average medicine man, average camp people, they were in societies and stuff on the other side of the family. And both of them had extremely different experiences. One was like an outlaw and really suffered in one, and the other suffered a totally different lifestyle of leadership and begging the federal government for money. And I just thought about how blessed I am to be where I'm at on this platform, being able to talk about all the issues that we talk about and getting it out to all of the people who are interested in listening to us. Thank you so much for listening. And there's just beyond our organization, we have a 501c3 and we have some core programs, but there are so many other cool programs in quote unquote Indian country. And so we had our fiscal sponsors, which we were fiscal sponsors for People's Food Sovereignty for a few years. And they do amazing work. And there's just so many, like Pukani Health Lodge Institute, Kim Paul and her work up on the Blackfeet Reservation, And then there's Indigenous tribal environmental professionals who are so down with the chronic wasting disease project and the dogs that they're funding and supporting the role of 2 internships for that project. And so we're hoping an Arizona native will come up and spend the summer. And then any just other tribal environmental professional that's looking to bring the dog work onto their reservation is welcome. And it's a paid internship, which is very cool. And so, yeah, you get to learn how to work with dogs. And it's just, so I was just really like kind of in awe and feeling blessed, and all of those people that I come from and all of their struggles that made them strong, and me learning from those struggles and holding on to their strengths that got them through that. And that's what we were going to talk about today, but we'll talk about that next week with Terrence LaFromboys. He's a master in social work, and our conversation was going to be around culture and environment and suicide prevention. I'm looking forward to that conversation. All those amazing people. Just another year of having Dr. Melanie Turvalon and Dr. Jan Marie Garcia in my life is, and in our work, and the ability for us to continue on our own professional development. And I love seeing where you're going and you getting into it. You've got a lot more fire behind you than I do. Like, I think I am like a cool kind of gentle rain type presence, and you've got the fire, which I appreciate.
I'm trying not to be a hurricane, you know. I'm trying to learn grace from you. If anybody's been listening for any amount of time, you know that I'm the one that has a little bit of an outburst here and there. I've been known on social media to go off, but I'm really trying to get it in check. And I think this year really helped. You know, I did my first facilitation with Cultural Humility this year back in March. That was my first time kind of giving it a go. And as scary as it was, I learned so much and I came out a bit more professional, which is something I'm learning, because I've had all different types of professionalism over my career. Working in radio, professionalism, it kind of means something else. Working, you know, and running my own little record label and my own little radio show here, I had to be a professional on a different type of level. So this is like a different, graceful, meaningful professional that I'm trying to incorporate into my work here with Cultural Humility, really taking the principles and like living it while I'm doing the work, which was huge this year. Huge. Absolutely instilled a bit more belief in myself. It's a confidence builder, something that I'm also embracing and not getting too caught up in imposter syndrome. And I am also looking forward to our chat with Terrence next week, hopefully, to go more into depth into those feelings that I kind of get stuck in. I recently watched The Neverending Story again, and I thought the horse scene, I was like, that's me. I got to cut that out. You know, like I really saw some of the lessons in that film, and I was just like blown away again and again of how you can't get stuck. You just have to keep going. And I've learned to get unstuck over and over again this year. I've also traveled a lot this year. That was huge. My first big one was going to Montana for an MMIW event for May 5th. It was so cool to see your community come together on that side and experience a whole new MMIW community, MMIW2S, I want to say, because I can't forget that part. But it was really cool to see and meet some of the families on that side, because if you don't know, it's a huge cross Turtle Island problem. And it seems never ending, especially right now what's happening in Winnipeg. Like there's just so much, right? Like constantly going on.
On that, there's a scam alert that was released by the Zuni Police Department. And I heard about this like a month ago, and some woman was like, I need help. This facility has kidnapped my brother. And I was like, what's going on? And, you know, I see it in my timelines. And so I looked into it a little bit more yesterday, and Insurgents, I don't know if I it's spelled with an N on Instagram. They're one of my friends that I probably met at an event in Phoenix somewhere, and I'm so sorry, I don't know your personal name behind that profile, but they shared a Buzuni Police Department alert, and I connected the story with that Navajo woman and her brother being kidnapped by a treatment center. And so there's these facilities that are popping up in Phoenix, Arizona, and in New Mexico, throughout the Southwest, where anybody can just start some kind of LLC of a recovery home. And I wanted to get Leah on to talk about this because she's a professional in drop-in centers and stuff like that, and walk-in centers. And apparently these people are sending out white vans and white SUVs, and they're picking up our street people from the reservation and kidnapping them and saying that they're treatment centers. But the people who are getting out of these treatment centers are saying that the conditions inside are very inhumane, and it's not actually a treatment center, and there's people dying in there. And
what?
Yes, I know. And so, like, talk about human trafficking and MMIP and MMIW and Two Spirits. This is just another way that people are exploiting other people and the conditions on the reservation. And so, I saw that. And the Zuni Police Department issued that little scam alert of white vans, white SUVs. Look it up, educate yourself, and check on your family members.
Yeah, be careful out there. Situational awareness has been huge for me as a pedestrian brown woman who navigates the metro systems of any large city I visit. It's situational awareness is massive, and it's not being paranoid, it's being real.
Right. Yeah, so that was just a huge, like you mentioned MMIW, and I'm like, oh my goodness, we have to talk about that. But yeah, back to our, if we can laugh and feel good after that, it
just possible. Goes to show how it's an ongoing crisis.
It is, yeah.
Right? I mean, another highlight would be the first episode is out for my collaboration with Dream Nation Love. Absolutely. And she's doing a series on MMIW because she's felt so compelled once learning about the crisis a few years back through one of her in-laws who is Indigenous. And she was just like, what? How is no one talking about this? And we're like, well, actually, we are talking about this. It's the other side. It's the dominant culture that doesn't talk about it. So she felt compelled to embark on this huge series. And about this time last year, she recruited me through a Facebook group called She Podcast, which is where a bunch of female podcasters all hang out in a group. And she made a post and was looking for someone Indigenous. And I was like, hello, I'm Indigenous. I'm a producer. So we linked up, and after several months of going back and forth, we finally got our first episode together, and it is stellar. Like, it is great. I'm looking forward to the second one, which should be out in February. So I got to collaborate with someone and kind of get the MMIW information out there to even more people, because it seems like that's what we can do. That's what I personally feel like I can do, is help with the awareness. Because we've been dealing with this for over a decade. In my professional career, I've been trying and working with people with this for over a decade professionally, out there, emceeing events, holding charity, fundraisers, everything you can imagine. And it never ends. The crisis continues. And this year, it was really cool to collaborate with someone who is non-Indigenous, who wants to use their platform to get the information out there, because it seems like sometimes we're on our own with each other in this, in this work, you know?
Yeah, just constantly preaching to the choir, you know.
So it's nice to have other people jumping on board and taking it very seriously and really trying to get it out there to other non-Indigenous people. Like, pay attention. Hello, look what's happening. Mm-hmm. You know? Mm-hmm. So that's cool.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the reasons why I went into the work that I do. My master's degree is in change management and innovative leadership, and that's mostly focusing on organizations and kind of like workplace type cultures, right? And so, I'm when I hear change, it used to scare me, just like everybody else, right? Like, even if things are bad, like, I'm going to make all kinds of excuses to just keep things the same because something else and different scenarios or unknowns are scarier than what's known, right? all kinds of sayings around it. It's like the devil you know is better than the devil you don't, or something along that lines. But when I hear like, and you're doing it, you're mentally preparing yourself for a big, like another life change. There's only three things that are major life. That's moving across the country, having a child, and dealing with death, right? Change can be really scary. And I think that's why I dove into it, mostly because I saw that from a governmental level, the federal governments, both in Canada and the US, need to have a new way of relating to and working with Indigenous people. So, you know, me, if I see something that needs to be done, I'll be like, I'll do it. So went and got a master's degree in change management. And then I'm going to be starting work. Hopefully this is the year where I find the funding and then my student loans are taken care of from undergrad. And I didn't get free education.
It's a lie.
Me neither. Paid it off.
I am not anywhere close to paying it off. And mine is pretty much like, even if I paid $500 a month, it would just be paying the interest rates.
Gross.
I know. It was some pretty fine print that is just pretty. And then the fine print that was there when I signed it, when it, somebody else new buys it, it, the whole thing changes. Interest rates change and circumstances. Yeah. So I'm hoping that those can be forgiven or paid off finally, and I can start this PhD work in organizational development and empirically testing the culture humility model opposed to the cultural competency model, which is one of the models that and training that I had in my master's degree. But it doesn't work to treat people like cogs in the system anymore. It doesn't work to treat people and your employees like they're disposable naturally. So this change management model of culture humility and the framework that it provides in creating efficient, productive departments and organizations is a, I think it's a good framework. And I think that it needs that empirical testing so that we can start moving entire industries over from cultural competency to cultural humility, because even as a Blackfoot woman, I will never be competent in what it fully means to be everything that a Blackfoot woman is supposed to be and meant to be. That's why I rely on my sisters and my community members to show you all the big, beautiful things that a Blackfoot woman can be. I don't need to be an herbologist when I have, you know, Dr. Rosalind Lapeer or any other, like Pauline Matt, she's a really awesome. Those Blackfoot women take up the herbology and the medicinal plants and the plant knowledge. And I know the basics of what keeps me afloat, right? But I don't know. Back to being grateful. I'm grateful for the women in my community that help teach me and support me and give me a genuine love that is not competitive or jealous. I love being surrounded by women who are genuinely supportive. And that's cool because I'm not out to compete. I'm competing with myself from yesterday, and I'm not even competing with myself. I'm just like kind of pushing myself to see how far a dream can go, right? If I want something, I'm going to kind of maneuver and navigate my way of attempting to get it. And I usually get pretty dang far, and I'm proud of that effort that I put in myself. And so I want to be better than, I want to navigate the next one better. I want to, you know, network differently or just constantly do better. And so, yeah, sisters and community members, I appreciate the non-jealous, non-competitive love that I'm getting out there. And I'm hoping that lateral violence in the communities is something that's starting to disappear more and more. And yeah, I feel like it was a good year for that. I feel like there was a lot of support between women and individual communities. And
definitely.
Yeah. Just like, and like Dream Nation, that podcast is right. Love. And so,
And I had to work through a couple of my own little resistors in the beginning, you know, like trusting white women is an issue that I've always had. Mm-hmm. And I had to really warm up to the idea, but I've let my guard down and I've become more collaborative and I've worked through my issues, and my anti-racism work has been really calling my heart this year. That's probably another thing that I look at as a huge positive, is I really felt compelled and drawn to it because the racism has affected me so deeply throughout my life. And to see so many people working in anti-racism is just so beautiful. It's kind of like they're hitting the nail on the head and they're speaking about it so openly and casually, because it felt so taboo to talk that way in this society. To even say white people really triggers a lot of them. But
absolutely,
white supremacy is out there, and I've really come to terms with it, and I've really found a way to navigate it. And I think that my future work is going to be really closely tied to anti-racism work. I feel like it's really in my heart and a calling that I'm going to answer to, and I'm slowly answering to. I'm kind of still in the research phase. I'm still working out how to deliver my messages clearly, confidently, without the former, I guess, outbursts that I used to have. So I'm learning from you how to gracefully, I guess, articulate the messages that I need to convey to the world, because I think that's what I was put here to do, use my voice, just not in the way that I thought I had previously. I'm transitioning into a different phase of using my voice for whatever purpose and whatever I feel like needs to get out there, which is really the anti-racism work that's calling me. And that's a big change. And I know that there's a lot of backlash with that. And people who do this work come under fire from a huge group of people out there. And I'm prepared for that as well. You know, I'm not afraid. I'm embracing everything that my heart is actually being pulled towards. So I'm just going to do it the best way I absolutely know how and still be open to growth, open to, you know, the cultural humility principles, critiquing myself as I go, and trying to form the best partnerships with people who are genuinely and authentically doing the same thing.
Yeah, there are some people so compelled and fearful about, like, quote unquote, DEI or diversity, equity, and inclusion work that they're like, oh, like some of the comments we got on our training from people of like, oh, look at these woke people, and how woke is like just a cash grab, and this is another Indian cash grab. And I'm dang, dude, I still got bills and debt, and I'm trying to raise a kid. And other people charge this much money for professional development trainings and certificates. Like, we all walk around with $1,000 iPhone. We can, if you're serious about your goals and your career, you're going to invest in your certifications and your professional development. And it's how you go farther. It's how you get paid more. It's the education level is the tools you come with. And DEI work is not about wokeness. Cultural humility is not necessarily about wokeness. It's about how you treat your people in your workplace so that your workplace is the best at what you do. And I am, when it comes to business, I am competitive, and I want to have the best products. I want to have the happiest employees. I want to have the happiest, best service. Customer service means a lot, right? You treat people good and people want to come back. You treat people good and people want to stay. You invest in them, your career. I think you're turning into a super badass trainer in cultural humility, and your knowledge on anti-racism and that fire that you carry picks up where my, like, because I've burnt out a couple of times in this work. I've been working in environmental justice for like over 20 years. And as a career in like the environment, like implementing some EPA grant or some USDA grant, but working on justice in Indigenous communities or for communities that are located near Superfund sites. And so cultural humility and all this DEI business is not about, you know, wokeness or creating racism because you're talking about race. It's talking about cultures and all the beautiful cultures that we have as people in this nation, and even in one little tiny family unit, like, let alone expanding out into the community, is that within one family, the interests and the passions range so variable. It's so variable in just one tiny small family that we couldn't all expect each other to have one way and be one way and act one way and dress one way and right. and be interested in one way. And if our businesses and our services that we provide are just one way, then we're limiting ourselves from the customers and clientele of thousands of different people from different cultures who would otherwise benefit from your service.
Right. I love it.
It's good business, you know, to treat people like people.
Treat people well.
Yes. Treat people like you know. Treat people better than you want to be treated. I refuse to lower how I treat people, even though I have been blamed of being fake. My love is not fake. My likes are not fake. My support for you is not fake. It's something that I would love for people to do for me, right? And so if I think I would appreciate it and it would feel good for me, then I'm doing it for somebody else for sure. And so, it's just all of these things that we can do for each other should be what we want and what we expect, because that's the world we're making. Be the change you want, right?
Totally. I also got my first grant this year.
Oh my God, Alice! More cheers there.
Kind of a little one, but hey, it's every little bit helps.
No, it's a $5,000 grant. That's huge. You know, we just need like 20 people to give us $5,000 grant.
So that's a huge highlight. I know that came in just at the very end of 2022, but I'm super stoked about that. More people getting involved.
What are we going to be doing with that one?
It's for MMIW support. So hopefully this upcoming May 5th, we can really go a little bit crazy with the spending and maybe have something special at the booth this year, you know, maybe offer Beautiful. Something, you know? So yeah. I'm looking forward to that, coming back to Montana, because I'm sure you'll have another event.
Yes.
We can use it for that.
Oh my goodness. That's amazing. So just in case nobody knows what, and we've talked about it before, is this thing that Indigenous Vision does. And I don't want anybody, I don't want myself or anybody who is contracted by me or working with me in any way, when we talk about environmental injustice, racism in Indian country, MMIP, I don't want any one of those people involved to reignite any trauma that they have experienced. And it will happen anyway. And so these are all, if you go to these community events, these are very brave people, because that grace that you're talking about, Melissa, only comes after much practice. I used to shake when I talked. I used to cry when I talk. And I've done years of wiping away tears and apologizing for my tears in a presentation of just something non-emotional, just a school presentation. Like, it was,
wow.
This is me reaching that goal of, I'm going to be a speaker. I'm going to be someone who talks. And I made it, and I worked through my fear. I challenged myself, and I continue to challenge myself in different environments where that scare me. So if it scares me or challenges me, I'm like on it. But we don't expect anyone to talk about their traumas, whether we're in a training or at an MMIW event. So we like to give those health honorariums for them to take care of themselves, self-care specifically, beyond just paying for them to get to the event or come to the event, to take care of themselves too. Because talking about those things in our lives that are hard, the traumas that we've gone through, is extremely hard. And so, like, you're processing a lifetime of racism that you've gone through. And I can't ask you to do that for free. I can't ask you to volunteer. Please volunteer for exposure.
Right? No more of that. I think we got time for one more highlight from the year. I don't know if you want to expand on anything else or mention anything else. I know my travel adventures were out of this world this year. I even visited Hawaii for the first time, my first time leaving Turtle Island. So that was pretty huge. I learned a lot. I learned a lot of grace from them as well. They seem so calm, and the calmness is really something I've embodied this year as well. And it comes from almost 3 solid years, maybe even 4 now, of meditation. I know it sounds really woo-woo, but it's been extremely helpful. And it's really helped my mind calm down. My mind no longer races. I used to be such a problem with me, was being able to just calm my mind. But now it's mostly calm a lot of the time, like about 95% of the time. I am regulated and calm this year. The times that it kind of gets out of hand, it's really easy to quickly grab it and stop it. Mm-hmm. That is something that is completely new for me this year, which is huge. So if I can do it, anybody can do it. I know it sounds crazy because I was never a believer in meditation. I'd be like, that's crazy. How can you just sit there in silence and learn? And I tried it, and it was rough for the first year because I just could not turn off my brain. But slowly it started to happen. And now I practice it on a busy metro bus. I'll practice it like in an environment where it's kind of chaotic and just be like, I wonder if I could just do it here. And I would try it for like 60 seconds and it will work. But it's really helped me see my thoughts and my habitual reoccurring rumination thoughts that are just on autopilot, and how I can just crush them now and be like, hey, that's just an old weird habit of mine. It's not really me. It's not coming from an authentic place. So that's what I've learned this year too with traveling, was being able to just be calm and regulated everywhere I went and just enjoy the moment and be present, whether it was in Memphis, Nashville, Montana, Hawaii, or even Canada. I went back twice this year. I was able to just calmly go about my life and enjoy the present moment.
That's so important. I was raised by mom who had like yoga books laying around. And so I would look at those and read about meditation and like fire breathing and stuff like that. And I've held on and adopted a lot of that stuff into my own life because I'm a worrier. I can probably be a pretty serious risk manager professional, especially around business and emergency risk management and planning for that, especially from an environmental perspective and quote unquote natural disasters. You know, just a PSA, don't build your new home in a floodplain type things. But yeah, how cool to stay present, especially in Memphis where the lights go out and you have so many moments to freak out.
And every time I see a person who's like, I could tell their mind is racing and they're like not regulated, I just want to go up to them and hug them and be like, you know what? Everything is fine. But that's crazy. You can't be doing that to people. But I see people struggling now and I'm just like, I wish I could pass this on somehow to other people to like help them, because it really does help.
Like grounding yourself or making yourself present, for sure. If you're worrying about something, and I tell my son this because I can tell that when his anxiety picks up, yes, 5-year-olds get anxiety, got to talk him through it. And but I can tell, like, especially when he's going between me and dad's house and he doesn't want to forget his game. He's really attached to his game and just loves it. And so I had to tell him, are you worrying, baby? And if he is, I'm like, well, everything's okay right now. Like when we worry, we're worried about a past conversation, you know, pick up the phone, say, hey, are we cool? Or, you know, if you're worrying about the past, there's not much you can do about it, right? What's done is done. And you just got to pick up and move on. And you can't let something back there ruin today. And then if you're worried about tomorrow, you still can't really do anything for it except for prepare. And so, but everything right now is totally fine, right? And breathing through that and then bringing that peace into all of those limbs to help move out energetically the issues in your tissues.
Totally. And it really makes for an authentic way of living. And it's become like, I've become an unshakable force of in my own life. Like, I know who I am. Finally, I'm finally like, wow, this is exactly who I am now. And I know, and I have a major BS radar, and I just cannot tolerate anybody's BS anymore, even for a little bit. I lost a friend this year after 25 years because I just couldn't tolerate it. There's been times where I've had to just kind of grow apart from someone this year because I just can't tolerate it anymore. I've really become an unwavering, good, authentic version of myself. And I can't betray myself anymore. And that's what I would used to do, is betray myself to please or be some kind of weird version for them of me. But now I just don't do that. And I'm way happier. I've accepted everything, and I'm learning acceptance on a huge level to where I don't feel the need to kind of go in and assert myself and my point of views.
Like the commenters on our training, right? Like, why, if you don't agree with something, why take a second out of your lifetime to say anything about it? You just move on with your day and go and do what you really believe in. And that's your thing.
That was a practice I had to learn, because I was a commenter sometimes. I would fire back, but now I'm not firing back because I got to save my energy for more important things.
For you, for yourself. Save energy for yourself, because these people are taking energy from you if you go out of your way to comment on something you don't agree with. And I mean, sometimes it's justified. I do it, you know, like, hey, especially on, like, I can't remember which one. I did one this year, and something was insinuated that Indigenous people were like really dumb. And this idea that we're primitive, running around killing each other, that's okay. Why? That's, we were slaughtered and conquered, and land was stolen. And I did comment back, like, there's a lot of amazing inventions that stem from, and like, I guarantee, like, more than half of the food on your plate right now is from an Indigenous cultivated vegetable. You know, strawberries weren't always as big as they are. Corn didn't start out as big as it is, you know. Indigenous made. It's beautiful. It's really cool to experience peace when you accept that somebody is on their own journey, and that the people registering for our trainings are on a purposeful, conscious journey of growing and developing as a person. And these are tools. And so everybody has their own tool, you know. There's all different kinds of ways to learn, but most horrible thing you can do to yourself is say, I already know and I've learned enough. And yeah, like, ouch, dude. What, we're humans. We're on this journey. We gotta learn. We're never gonna be done. We're never gonna be done learning.
Thanks for listening to the Indigenous Vision Podcast. You can leave us a like and a 5-star review if you'd like on our Apple Podcast or on our Spotify. You can check out a whole lot more about us on our website, indigenousvision.org. And if you want to register your team for the Indigenous Vision Cultural Humility Training of Trainers for this January, visit our website, indigenousvision.org/cultural humility. I have shared the link for that in the description for this episode. All are welcome to register for our 10-hour, 4-day virtual training on the principles and practices of cultural humility. Join us each day as we dialogue through the framework and become a lifelong member of the cohort with access to exclusive training and a network of resources. It's one of the coolest things I ever did for myself. Thank you, and have a great day.